Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the first day of June. Our guest this first hour of the program writes that Mexico's President Felipe Calderón is directly responsible for the violence which has taken 22,000 plus lives over the past 3 years in Mexico. The violence today threatens to spill over to the U.S., and after 3 years of Calderón's administration, there is no sign of improvement. He takes the U.S. White House to task, saying that the recent dinner with Mexico's president may serve as the culmination of President Obama's failed strategy of appeasement. He has not demanded concrete results in the drug war or asked hard questions about human rights, corruption, and judicial reform. The administration has been distracted by a sweet-talking Mexican foreign policy team, and if our president wants to help reduce violence south of the border, it is time for him to stop playing Calderón's game and exercise real leadership in North America. Our guest this hour is John Ackerman, a professor at the Institute for Legal Research at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, editor-in-chief of the Mexican Law Review, and a columnist for La Jornada newspaper and Proceso magazine. We'll be welcoming phone calls for John during the course of this hour. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you would like to send an email, you can do that. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. John, good morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to talk to you, an honor to be on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you. How is Mexico's President Felipe Calderón responsible for the violence that has taken 22,000-plus lives?
Well, it's a complicated issue. Basically, there are various ways of approaching it. Felipe Calderón was elected in 2006 as the president of Mexico. In a very complicated political context, he won by a very small margin, about 0.5% of the vote, about 200,000 votes out of almost 30 million votes cast. And he needed something to bolster his public legitimacy, right? And in a very similar way to what happened, for instance, after the 2000 elections in the United States, I would say, Calderón decided that a quote-unquote war would be the best way of rallying the people behind him. So he declared a war on the drug traffickers. The problem is that he didn't have at that time, and today at least continue to have these problems, he didn't have the strong institutions necessary to actually combat this problem. And the problem of narco-trafficking and drug trafficking in Mexico is, I would say, more of a law enforcement issue than a military issue, right? So he threw the military out into the streets trying to grab these leaders of the drug cartels, shoot them down the streets as it would be. And this is, unsurprisingly, just created more violence. It's created a situation of chaos, actually, in some parts of Mexico, and the institutions of judicial institutions, police institutions, have not developed to actually get these drug leaders into jail and actually accuse them. And I insist this is a law enforcement problem. It's not going to be solved by throwing the military onto the streets. And it also happens to be against the Mexican Constitution, as it would be in the United States as well. It would be kind of intolerable, I think, for U.S. citizens, for the U.S. president to announce that he's going to send the National Guard or the military out into the streets to set up checkpoints on all the national highways and take care of basic law enforcement in some of the city, the country's major cities. This is really basically a publicity stunt and not much of an effective solution to the problem. And so that's why I say that Calderón is responsible for this problem, because instead of prioritizing institutional reform, instead of prioritizing the central issues of Mexican social and political development, he decided to roll the military in the streets, which has basically just created more violence and not solved the problem. And now this is starting to affect the United States, and that's the problem from your point of view as well.
And is the military and law enforcement agencies on the take?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the corruption is the big problem in Mexico. I would say that the two most important problems in Mexico, which have created this public security crisis, economic crisis as well, are, on the one hand, the incredible concentration of wealth. The inequality in Mexico is terrible. It's one of the most unequal countries in the world, in which is a very incredible concentration of wealth in very few hands. And on the other hand, the question of accountability and corruption. Corruption has always been historically a serious problem with the Mexican government and the state apparatus in general. This is something that's been inherited from 70 years of rule by a single party during most of the 20th century. And the new party, the Party of National Action, to which Calderon belongs and Fox before him, we've been governed by them for the last 10 years, they came in on a platform saying that they were going to attack this central issue of corruption. But this hasn't happened. Really, the corruption indicators in Mexico have not moved. We're really just about the same as we were in the past, and particularly in the area of police and law enforcement, this has been one of the most vulnerable areas in Mexico because of the incredible amount of money that these narco-traffickers have, which, of course, come from U.S. users. We shouldn't forget to mention that.
Right. We had a guest a few weeks ago who was talking about Juarez, Mexico. I'm sure you're familiar with his book.
Sure.
But he was saying that the money that's coming from these cartels is just phenomenal and is a major source of income for the Mexican government.
Uh-huh. Yes. There's billions and billions of dollars come over every year. It's one of the drugs is one of the major exports from the Mexican economy. The money goes into the economy, goes into the government. And it really has led to the creation of sort of a parallel authority structures. And this is what the central problem is. And yes, I think we shouldn't forget that the major source, the root of the violence in Mexico is in the United States. The drug users in the United States are the ones who fund the narco-traffickers, who then use this to purchase weapons and to buy off government officials. The guns, the estimations say that 80% or more of the weapons that are used by Mexican drug cartels are purchased in the United States. And it doesn't help that a few years ago, in 2004, the United States let expire an assault weapons ban that had been existed for about 10 years since the Clinton administration. And today, neither Obama nor the Congress seem to be particularly convinced about the possibility of reinstating this assault weapons ban, which, these assault weapons, I understand the constitutional rights of the United States to bear arms, but assault weapons are a specific kind of weapon which is not for self-defense, right? These are weapons which are used for military attack strategies, which are the ones that the narcos, the drug cartels use in Mexico.
You call for the President of the United States to exercise real leadership in North America and say that he's been distracted by a sweet-talking Mexican foreign policy team. What does it mean for the United States to exercise real leadership?
Well, I think it's a complicated issue, right? It's easy to say that and then to unpack it. Let's try to do that. What I've been trying to argue in the articles I've been publishing and writing is that President Obama really should try to branch out beyond Calderon, right? Calderon is the president of Mexico, and there needs to be a formal, and there is a good relationship between Obama and Calderon, and that's good. The problem is that Calderon, like I said, has been using this drug war for political purposes. And this is not in the interest of the United States that the military support, the development support, other sorts of financial support that the U.S. government gives to Mexico be used for political purposes and not for actually solving the problem, right? And so there really should be a more broad-based diplomacy on the part of Obama towards the Mexican people, towards civil society, opposition parties, Congress, judiciary. There's a really complex and diverse amount of important actors in Mexico, which all have ideas and can really participate in resolving this very serious problem, which affects Mexico and affects all of North America.
What about the worry? Our attention span is short in this country, but you also talk about Calderon's party being more pro-American than the predecessor, mm-hmm. and that Washington has adopted Calderon as a favorite son and has some concerns that the PRI may soon return to power.
Mm-hmm.
What's that concern, and tell us more about the PRI?
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like this is sort of the reasoning that's the Obama administration is following, right? That anything is better than the PRI. The PRI is the party of the institutional revolution. This is the party that governed Mexico for almost all of the 20th century, for over 70 years, and then in 2000 was finally kicked out by the Party of National Action, which is Calderon's party, and the PRI. Which is the short for this old guard party, is suspected to be much more cozy with the drug cartels than the present administration, and so the Obama government is sort of seems to be sort of politically supporting Calderon with that hope that the PRI not return to power in two more years. 2012 is the present election. But the thing is that on the surface there are different parties, but basically the present administration, Mexico, has been following along the same way of acting and way of behaving as the PRI, and in many ways has actually made things worse. I'm not a big supporter of the PRI at all. The thing here is that I think that the U.S. government doesn't have to, shouldn't be participating in this sort of political debate in Mexico, supporting Calderon against the PRI, falling into this sort of political ploy. That they should be doing is insisting, whether it be the PAN or the PRI or the PRD or any other party in Mexico, that they actually take serious steps to resolve this problem. That's the important issue, not to get caught up in these kind of political calculations.
Mm-hmm. And finally, before we go to phone calls, final question from me. You talk about it. NPR did a big thing on this last week that
yes.
This Sinaloa cartel, one of the most powerful drug cartels, has really not been reprimanded, and that perhaps the government may be favoring the mm-hmm. Sinaloa cartel. What's that all about?
Yes, these are suspicions which have been in the air for a long time. The NPR report from a couple weeks ago is clear and seems to provide evidence in this way. We don't have final convincing evidence this is actually the case, but there is a suspicion which has existed for many years now. Prominent politicians have stepped up and spoken about this, denounced that Calderon seems to be favoring one cartel over others. The numbers NPR reports and other independent research have reported seem to indicate, yes, that the federal government has been attacking much more aggressively two of other cartels, one of them, for instance, the Cartel de Juarez and the Beltrán-Leyva cartel. We don't have to get into the names of them specifically, but attacking them more than attacking the Sinaloa cartel, which is run by someone who's called the Chapo Guzman. He's actually on he's on the Forbes the most wealthy people in the world list, top 500, I think, Guzman. And he is very much in control of the drug trade in Mexico. And interestingly enough, the Mexican government just has not been able to find him. His number two person even, dared to give an exclusive interview to one of the major news magazines here in Mexico, talking about his life and about other things. It really seems kind of strange, the situation. And there are suspicions there. And I think that the larger problem of corruption that we mentioned in the beginning is the central issue. I think here, just in sort of a general comment before we go to the listeners' questions, I think it's important not to see Mexico as such as only a place where corruption and violence comes from. Mexico is still very much not only a beautiful country, but a vigorous country economically and politically. That's not in question. I live here. I think it's a great place. The problem is that our politics have been very much distorted And there's this political distortion of the war on drugs that we really need to correct. And there are lots of voices here in Mexico that Obama and people in the United States need to listen to when thinking about a more complex and sophisticated strategy in working with Mexico to solve this and other problems.
John Ackerman, our guest this hour, professor at the Institute of Legal Research of the National Autonomous University of Mexico, vice president of the International Association of Administrative Law. He is an editor-in-chief of the Mexican Law Review and a columnist for a newspaper, La Jornada, and Proceso magazine. Here's our phone number. One line is open, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for John Ackerman, starting with Jim from Galena, Illinois. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for your program. Listen to you constantly. Love it. And for the professor, I was involved in a little bit of war as back in the 1990s. I serviced 38, 39 different plants in Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Missouri. And a lot of these plants moved to war as down there in that industrial complex. And because of the drug program, or problem, I should say, they had a very hard time keeping people. And in 2000, the Bush administration wanted to open up that free trade agreement for truck drivers and the semis from Mexico to haul equipment and material into this country. And I can personally tell you that they had a major drug problem then. It just wasn't publicized as well as it is now. It wasn't quite as violent. But had they opened up the borders down there and let those truck drivers come through from Mexico all across that line, we would have triple the drugs in this country that you've got coming in right now. Maybe not as many kidnappings and other things going on down there. I had a friend just come back from Brownsville down there, and he said it's extremely dangerous down there now on the American side of the border, along that border and a lot of those areas.
John.
Yeah, these are the important issues. I'm not sure whether the truck driving issue is related to the flow of drugs. That's a different issue on the side that's being negotiated still between Mexico and the United States. According to NAFTA, Mexico should have the right to bring the trucks over the border. And the fact that there are Mexican truck drivers or U.S. drivers, I don't think affects the quality of the border checking. And here, I think there's a real responsibility on the U.S. side. I mean, the drugs come into the United States. I mean, they go through Mexico, and when they cross the border, it's the U.S. authorities which need to be checking on the U.S., Mexican, or any other trucks that are coming across the border. And it seems to me that there's a serious problem on the U.S. side. I mean, the drugs are getting to the big cities. They're getting to the drug users in the United States. They're getting moved across U.S. highways and getting to the drug dealers in throughout the United States. And so I think there's an important thing of co-responsibility here between both sides of the border. Now, this is, of course, not to minimize the problem in Juarez or in Mexico. I'm the first person to criticize the strategies of the Mexican government that they just have not actually resolved this problem, and this is affecting all of North America. But I would think that it's important to pay attention also to the border control on the U.S. side, and not in terms of immigration, but in terms of the drug flow. Yeah.
Thank you, Jim, so much for your call. John is calling now from San Miguel, Mexico. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good, good, good. John, do you know the fame of a town called Aguililla or Apatzingan, Uruapan, in Michoacan, and whether or not the government knows that there's such strongholds for narcos. And this danger for Americans is totally ridiculous because we're not in the dogfight. And it's a shame that so many Americans have canceled their plans to come down here because, you know, the drug problem between the cartels and the army or Calderon, it doesn't really filter over to us at all. And the last question is whether medical marijuana use up in the States, and if our proposal in California legalizing marijuana, what effect do you think that might have on the drug trafficking from Mexico to U.S.?
Can I go ahead and jump in? Yeah. I think these are great questions, John. I think on both sides, you're right to point out these issues. On one hand, I think you're right. The U.S. Citizens or tourists have not been targeted in Mexico at all. I don't think there is a danger for tourists. Really, the violence has been centered exactly in those places of Mexico where there is more presence of the narcos, and particularly the focus has been on the routes, the transit routes of the drugs towards the United States, and those routes are normally try to avoid the tourist centers, right? So Juarez is an important point, and other parts of Michoacan, but in general, the tourist sites have been safe, and I don't know of any cases of tourists or of U.S. citizens beyond this particular Juarez case, which I think is a separate case in which U.S. citizens have been specifically targeted in this quote unquote drug war. In terms of medical marijuana, I think this is an interesting case. If California decides to authorize it, we'll have a very contradictory, paradoxical situation in which, as the drugs move up through Mexico, at least the marijuana moves up through Mexico, causing deaths on both sides of the narcos and the government all the way, and then once it crosses the border, it's legal. So that would be a serious contradiction, and it would be something that the Mexican government or the U.S. government would need to think about in terms of different strategies to deal with this problem. Because it's true, from the numbers I've seen, a majority of the drugs which go through Mexico and is the source of all this money and violence is marijuana. I mean, cocaine, heroin is there as well, but marijuana is the number one drug which is coming across and creating these problems. And if California were to decide to do that, which I think would be a positive decision, then we would have to really start to rethink how we're dealing with this problem in all of North America.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, John?
Yeah, actually, the question about Aguililla, Apatzingan, and Uruapan, those are strongholds for narcos. The government must know about them. I know about them. Why haven't they done anything with those towns?
Yeah, I mean that's the complicated thing about this supposed war on drugs, right? So that's what to me demonstrates that the Mexican president is more about the publicity nature of this than the actual resolving the problem. If he were really interested in resolving the problem at its roots, he would make a lot less public mention of it, wouldn't even necessarily need the military on the streets all the time, but would do some serious criminal investigation to identify the strategic areas where he needs to intervene, and he would do so with raids, etc., and actually get these people into jail. The thing is that the Mexican government has done raids. For instance, in Michoacan last year, they did they picked up a whole bunch of mayors actually in May of last year, and threw them into jail. And now a year later, most of these mayors are out free. We don't know whether they're actually innocent or whether because the government was just very sloppy in putting together the cases. But either way, we're not actually attacking the problem. He arrests people, they parade them in front of the television cameras, but then a few months later, these same people end up back on the streets. And that's a problem. We need institutional reform. We need institutions which are effective and can do criminal investigation and actually get people behind bars who are breaking the law.
Thank you, John. Very nice to hear from you. You mentioned the violence being related to the drug cartels, et cetera. There's also a great deal of violence and danger for journalists who are covering this story. Mm-hmm. Why are they targeted?
Yes, this is a big question. Freedom of the press in Mexico has moved forward in a significant way over the last 10, 20 years. Before, it was very much controlled by the government. Now there's a bunch of independent private media outlets and government channels, which are very much open to civil society. But there's a serious problem of threats towards the free exercise of the press. And then this comes from the narcos themselves, and it also comes from government authorities, both local and federal authorities, who are uncomfortable about this new freedom of the press. So the narcos get upset when the press start to report on their activities, right? Mm-hmm. Things that they would like to be maintained secret, and so they have directly attacked journalists, and particularly on the northern border, who have sort of crossed the line and not respected this pact of silence. And on the other hand, the government officials also have targeted journalists through threats or even physical abuse when they try to question the government activities related to narcos or in other topics themselves, other topics which are related to democracy or political competition.
Hmm. Mike from Milwaukee, hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I think this is the greatest argument I ever heard for limiting immigration to Mexico. You have illegal people coming over here. You don't know if they're addicted themselves, if they have cousins that are kingpins in the drug trade in Mexico. We have no control over that. So if you have all this mayhem occurring in Mexico, it's going to corrupt the civilization that we have here simply by importing people here, thinking that they're working for cheap labor, when at nighttime they may be out there selling drugs. We have no control over what we don't know. And so consequently, I hope the Tea Party is listening to this, because this is the best argument I've heard so far for limiting and being extremely careful about who we take over our borders and getting rid of people that don't have documents and that are illegal.
John.
Well, that's one take on it. It's definitely not the angle I'd like to emphasize. I think that the problem is that in terms of immigration, it's not so much is the central problem, I would say, is the confusion exactly about the fact that there isn't a systematic and effective immigration policy in the United States. I mean, the United States needs these workers, but is not willing to give them legal status in the United States. And what that creates is a pool of illegals, right? And it's the illegality that creates problems and the rule of law, and can create these issues of drug violence and possible infiltration of the narcos in the United States. That's the real problem. If the United States were willing to recognize that these workers were necessary for the U.S. economy and give them legal status, that would be the best way of putting order on the presence of Mexicans in the United States and allow the relationship between the United States and Mexico to be a lot more satisfactory. The real problem is this sort of creation of this forced illegality, right? I mean, the United States needs these workers but isn't willing to give them legal status, and that, to me, is the real problem. The United States couldn't just sort of close the borders and exclude all of the Mexicans. That wouldn't be practical for the U.S. economy, and it wouldn't solve the drug problem either. I mean, the major drug problem comes from the United States. Consumption is in the United States. That's where the money and that's where the addicts are. Drug consumption has increased in Mexico, but it hasn't. It by no means is linked to at the same levels as the United States. So I think we need to avoid these kinds of us versus them approaches to the issue. Mexico has a problem. The United States also has a problem. But we need to work together on this and not just sort of throw them all out as if that was going to be a solution to the problem.
Or assume that they're all selling drugs on the side after they work in a meatpacking factory
exactly.
for
right.
12 hours a day.
The ones who are selling drugs are not the Mexican laborers working at the meatpacking. These are drug cartels, which have their U.S. counterparts as well. We can't fall into this kind of stereotyping of Mexicans as somehow drug users and sellers in and of themselves, just because they that come from Mexico.
We've done a couple shows on NAFTA in the last couple weeks, John, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Several of our guests have said that NAFTA is to blame for a huge number of people crossing the border simply because it resulted in much lower wages. It resulted in farmers going out of business, small farmers, small companies going out of business, and very, very low wages. So people are crossing to find work to keep their families alive. Is that a significant problem?
Mexico is going through a difficult economic situation. That is definitely the case, and this is a problem that the Mexican government, the U.S. government, need to think about. The whether NAFTA is somehow the cause of this, I think that's difficult. I think in the long run, difficult to say. I think it's basically, I would say that's wrong, because in the long run, what we need is sustainable development in Mexico. And how do we get there? By, I think it's inevitable in this age of globalization that we need to link up both economies, Mexico and United States. We both need each other for a wide diversity of economic and political reasons, and so somehow the idea of, again, of closing off the border economically or to the flow of people will somehow solve the problem, I think is the wrong way to go. We need to think about a more creative and complete ways in which the United States and Mexico can work together. I think the problem with NAFTA is that it does sort of focus specifically on the interests of corporations. It's really just about corporations looking for cheaper labor south of the border. And Mexico is not going to develop if that's all that Mexico can create. Cheap maquiladora labor along the northern border of Mexico, the southern border of the United States. The United States should think about working together with Mexico in a more full economic development plan, a kind of a Marshall Plan or a real European Union, a North American Union, in which the United States sees the economic situation in Mexico as part of its own future.
Yes. Thanks, Mike. Let's go to Paul from East Troy. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a kind of a hypothetical question here, and that is some European countries have legalized and control drugs in their borders and have shown that they have significantly reduced crime rates there. Mm-hmm. And my question is, fairly unlikely, I imagine, that whether or not if the United States were to legalize and control drugs, realizing that it would probably have an impact on violence, drug-related violence in the United States, might it have some impact on the violence and drug-related violence in Mexico? I also have a quick comment. Kathleen, I love you dearly, but will you please pronounce the name of our state correctly? It's Wisconsin, not Wisconsin.
I said Wisconsin?
Yes. It comes out when you're speaking quickly. Wisconsin, Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, I don't mean to say that. Believe me, I love the state dearly. Wisconsin. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. John.
Yeah, I think the issue of legalization is very important, and getting back to the Tea Party comment, and this is the whole point, right? What creates the space for chaos and violence is when there are social needs and there are social processes which the state doesn't recognize and is not willing to regulate in a serious way, but prefers to pretend that they don't exist. And this exists with the situation of immigration. We need the workers, but we're not ready to actually give them a formal space. So this creates uncomfortable chaos for both sides, both for the immigrants and for the U.S. population. And this occurs with drugs as well. When there is this demand, this need, which needs to be reduced, but it exists, it's better to regulate and to organize society in a way that we can tolerate this without this creating serious violence and attack to the rule of law itself. And so I think this is what really needs to happen. I think it's probably unlikely, and given the U.S. political debate that this actually become an issue, in Washington at least, is taken seriously. But this is obviously the source of the problem and what's creating violence on both sides of the border and addiction and increased in crime. I think this is a very important point by your listener.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, and you highlight two of the robber barons who appeared at the fancy dinner at the White House a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago. I'd like to talk more about eliminating poverty south of the border. You say that it requires a political will to break mm-hmm. the control of the monopolists over the Mexican economy mm-hmm. and to redistribute income. However, yes. when we have two of these monopolists at the dinner, it doesn't bode well for that happening. Who are these guys, these robber barons, as you call them, who are at the White House dinner?
Yeah, well, one is the wealthiest man in the world. Carlos Slim is, just in the last Forbes report, beat out Bill Gates as the most wealthy man in the entire world. He is Mexican. His wealth has come from Mexico, although he is now diversified internationally. And this is a indication of the problem, right? So he built his wealth over the last 20 years, which is precisely the last 20 years in which Mexico has gone through a couple of very serious economic crises in which poverty has improved in some ways, but not really improved significantly in the last 20 years. Between 40% and 60% of the Mexican population is below the poverty line. And then we have these super rich people like Carlos Slim, the most wealthy person in the world, and another, a dozen families which really control the Mexican economy. So the major, sectors like telecommunications, cement, which is a major industry in Mexico, corn as well, are controlled by one or two or perhaps three corporations, which in turn are owned by one or two families. This is the real problem. Mexico is a wealthy country as a country, lots of natural resources, a pretty well-educated population, per capita income around $6,000 per person. So it's not a poor country. Mexico is part of the OECD, which is the International Association of the Wealthiest Countries in the World. The problem is that this wealth is terribly distributed. I mean, Mexico is really one of the most unequal countries in the world, next to Brazil. It's even worse than most African countries. And this is the central problem. And this is what, again, the federal government, Mexico, Calderon's government, has not been interested in attending to. His party is very much linked to these very same business and corporate interests. I think business and corporations are great, but they need to also share the wealth and make sure there's a more democratic development. And so that's one of the central problems. And here, once again, Obama and the United States could do their thing to do their part to support this. And at least the symbolism at this big state dinner last 2 weeks ago wasn't encouraging in this way, because Calderon came up with these robber barons, as I call them, because they really recall the history of in the United States of the robber barons, who are basically monopolists who control large sections of the economy. And there wasn't a real dialogue with Mexican people or even with American people. I mean, it was a very symbolic event, but it wasn't, Obama didn't talk about his solidarity with the Mexican immigrants or the Mexican people, and Calderon even less so. And so it really seemed more like a royal affair between the elites instead of an alliance between the people of Mexico and the United mm-hmm. States.
John Ackerman is our guest this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls. He is a professor at the Institute for Legal Research at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, editor-in-chief of the Mexican Law Review, and a columnist for La Jornada newspaper and Proceso magazine. Our number, one line is open. Thank you, Paul, for your call. 800, two lines are open. 800-486-8655. And our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email that's come in, John. If I were president of Mexico, I would be concerned that one of my country's biggest exports is its citizens. Why are so many Mexican people anxious to leave the country, either legally or illegally? Is Calderon taking steps to keep Mexico's citizens?
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, one of the big things here we need to recognize, as I mentioned before, is that the U.S. economy needs Mexican workers. It's not just that the Mexicans are knocking on the door and trying to bust their way in because they don't have work in Mexico. It's that the U.S. economy is actually calling on Mexican workers to come across the border and to do jobs that the United States citizens either don't want to, or are there other issues there in terms of the United States workers actually occupying these jobs? And so that's where I would start from. On the other hand, yes, the Mexican government should be doing a lot more exactly to develop the economy in an equal and democratic way. Like I said, if you have all the wealth being concentrated at the top, it's going to be very hard for that to sort of somehow automatically trickle down to the Mexican population. We do need new economic policies in Mexico, which really look at the interests of the peasants and the poor, offer them opportunities and make it less attractive for them to go to the United States. I think that is true. This is an indication of the failure of Mexican economic policy, the fact that
sure.
So many Mexicans do immigrate to the United States every year. Once again, I think the United States could help out in this way, in terms of actually creating a more full economic and political alliance with Mexico, and not just NAFTA, which was a step, but was very much designed and continues to be designed in the interests of once again these wealthy interests instead of the interests of the workers and the poor.
Matt in Lake Geneva, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I was going to talk about the desertion rate in the Mexican military mm-hmm. and the arms that flow out of the military into the drug trade. But you just talked about something that I think hits the nail right on the head with regard to the economic situation. You said the U.S. economy needs Mexican workers. Well, I think the Mexican economy needs foreign entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. A Mexican can come into the United States and we have a lot of great Mexican immigrants around here, and I'm all for them coming here and working. But they can come here and start, say, a landscaping business with no effort, no corruption. You don't need to get a license, no red tape. Mm-hmm. And you need to let people into Mexico, Americans, mm-hmm. for one example, or people from anywhere else, to bring their capital to Mexico, and not just big corporations that can make deals with your government like we've done with NAFTA, but you
right.
need to let little entrepreneurs go into Mexico, take their capital there, and not suffer corruption and red mm-hmm. tape and all these kind of hurdles to starting a business. And these people will create the economy that Mexico has failed to create with its kind of wacky one-off socialist kind of government that it has there.
Okay, well, I agree with you with about the general point in terms of, yes, Mexico needs to clean up its institutions and make both domestic investment and foreign investment, particularly by not the large capital, but the smaller entrepreneurs, more attractive and possible in the Mexican economy. I think you're right. That would help a lot. And that's something that the Mexican government has not done a whole lot. I wouldn't say that the present Mexican government is socialist or anything similar. To the contrary, the present president of Mexico, Felipe Calderón, is from the Party of National Action, which is the right wing, pro-business, pro-Catholic party here in Mexico. So by no means is there a socialist orientation presently. I think Mexico would probably do well to have a little bit more of that I don't know, socialist, but, you know, populist orientation, for precisely what you're saying, that the economic reforms, institutional reforms encourage the little guy to invest instead of just paving the way for the big guys to eat up the whole package and maintain poverty as it is.
Caroline from Gurnee, Illinois. Hi. Caroline, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to dispel what I find to be a myth about illegals coming in and doing gardening jobs. I worked for a small company. I'm no longer employed. They routinely hired illegals through temp services so that they didn't have, you know, they could say they didn't know they were illegal. The illegals made no bones about the fact that they were illegal. Many of us lost our jobs, and we made reasonable wages because they could pay these people less money through temp agencies. So not all of these people are coming over and doing gardening jobs. I worked for a manufacturing company and made a decent wage. I don't any longer.
Jonathan.
Right. Well, now here the problem is. So what's the problem here? Is it the Mexicans or the illegality? Right. This is exactly the problem. The fact that we haven't recognized in the United States the legality of Mexican immigrants or in a sufficient way means that since there's an illegal market, corporations or businesses can pay these people wages without benefits or lower wages. If they were legal, these Mexicans, they would compete with you or with anybody else in equal circumstances. And if they are better trained and better workers, then they would get the job. And if not, not. And that's what competition is about. And that's what we need to live in order to strengthen the U.S. and the Mexican economies. What this woman is complaining about is that somehow there was a unfair competition because of the fact that these Mexicans were illegal and they could be therefore paid less. I insist the problem is not that they were Mexicans, but that they were illegal, and so the response is not to kick the Mexicans out, but to legalize the economy that already exists and make sure that there is fair competition among everybody for the same jobs.
What do you think is going to happen with the immigration issue in the United States in the coming months? It seems to me as though it's about to explode.
I don't know. You know better than I would, and your listeners. I'm sitting here in Mexico City. I read the U.S. press, but I'm not particularly informed on the detailed situation. I think that something definitely needs to happen from the perspective, from the Mexican perspective. This is definitely an unsustainable situation we have here. The Arizona legislation, apparently another 13 or 14 states in the United States are considering similar laws, which would basically racially profile Mexicans in the United States. This is a response to the situation of crisis. Hopefully this will create a situation in which people on both sides, conservatives, Democrats, right and left, really realize that they need to solve the problem at its roots and not focus on this more kind of racialized prejudice, I think, approach to the issue. President Obama has talking about the broken immigration system. In the previous administration, John McCain himself was one of the major supporters of a new legislation to create a path towards citizenship and towards legalization for the Mexicans in the United States. Now, for political reasons, he seems to be on the other side of the aisle, but I think that there is room for both conservatives and liberals, both Democrats and Republicans, to come together on this issue, because in the end, it's in the interest of everybody in the Mexican economy and the U.S. economy to create a more regulated and legalized way of attending this situation, because with so much demand and so much illegality, all we do is create spaces for the lack of the rule of law, which affects democracy and affects economic development.
Thanks, Caroline. Scott in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hey,
another
Scott.
Wonderful program. Question I've got is this. My understanding from U.S. history is that it was really prohibition that got organized crime in this country established as a major enterprise, and that after the repeal of prohibition, they didn't exactly go away. All they did was switch their activities into other areas. Now, I grew up out in the west part of this country, southwest, and I remember being in high school in the early 60s. Marijuana was just about unheard of, and we used to travel into Mexico, and it was considered a relatively safe and beautiful place to go. Now, my question for you is, do you think it's a case where the genie is out of the bottle in terms of the drug cartel south of the border, and that if this country were to actually legalize drugs, that these folks would maintain their enterprise just like organized crime did in this country and go into just some other activities?
We have about 30 seconds, John.
Okay, well, I think the prohibition comparison is very relevant and demonstrates how the war mentality is not going to work. I mean, the war on the gangs in Chicago was a failure, and the end in prohibition had to be lifted. I think that's obviously the central way to solve the problem, eliminating a prohibition at least on marijuana. Whether the drug cartels in Mexico would try to go into different areas, of course they would, but they would have a lot less money. I mean, the amount of money coming down to the United States through the sale of illegal drugs in the United States is just phenomenal, and it would be a major undercutting of their power in Mexico if drugs were legalized in the United States.
John Ackerman, thank you so much. You've been a wonderful guest. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you and to speak with your listeners.
Thanks, John. John Ackerman joining us by phone from Mexico City, professor at the Institute of Legal Research at the National Autonomous University of Mexico and vice president of the International Association of Administrative Law. He has also worked as a senior consultant to the World Bank and does a great deal of writing for newspapers and magazines. Thanks to Rhonda Fanny for producing this hour and to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. We have another hour to come following the news. Stay with us.